from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the French Quarter, the Freedom Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, there's no better warm-up, at least for the host's morale, than to have just outside your window a guy doing a fearfully tone-deaf rendition of What a Wonderful World, which just transpired, just ended before the top of the hour. So thank you, sir, whoever you are, and good luck with the career. Ladies and gentlemen, top of the show, a couple of personal mea culpas, because, you know, I make fun of other people apologizing. It looks like so much fun. I'm joining in. I neglected last week to thank David Friedman and WWOZ for being the new hosts of this broadcast. It's a great kind of little story of what happens here in New Orleans. WWOZ itself was made homeless, and through the good offices of the French Market here in the French Quarter, got new digs. And then I became homeless, the show became homeless. Thanks. I'm fine. And David reached out and said, hey. So it's the great chain of hey. And also, dear Harry, I'm reading now, so you can tell. During last Sunday's Le Show, you mispronounced the name of Chicago White Sox manager Ozzie Guillen. I said Guillen. I did indeed. The correct pronunciation is Guillen. May we have your apology? Yes, you may. I apologize. Because here in New Orleans, we really don't care how other people pronounce their names or their, you know, that's why it's Burgundy Street. You see what I'm saying? So Ozzie got off easy. It is Mardi Gras weekend. The national media are here en masse to regale you with, as CNN puts it, a Mardi Gras to remember. I like how they've decided that what the story is before it's happened. I love that. Then you really don't even really, really need to send the people down. Just run that title and you've done the job. And a lot of the local media people here are expressing the hope in their columns and so forth that the outsiders this time will get it, will understand what happened and what's happening here, because the sliver by the river is alive and kicking, and the devastated swath is status quo. I don't hold out much hope for the outside media getting it. And here's the bet, ladies and gentlemen. You tell me, after you watch all of the coverage, if anybody put their headquarter camera position any place other than Bourbon Street. Hello, welcome to the show. Keep on watching.
Boston's head of town to meet in Shakespeare Park. And they all gonna be there, have no kind of fear. They all sold for them brand new suits to mask in every year, yeah. We got a bloody caterpillar.
From the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana. From the French Market, they're in. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And, you know, I'm cursed slash gifted with this memory, so I remember what happened 3 months after 9/11. They had the Macy's Parade. I don't remember a big debate about whether they should have the Macy's Parade, whether it was disrespectful to have a giant helium-filled Snoopy. I remember, out of respect, the NFL, when they resumed national television games of pro football a couple weeks after 9/11, out of respect, they announced that that week only they would not have the whooshing sound effects to accompany the action. Can't have that, out of respect. But they did have the Macy's Parade in New York a scant 3 months after 9/11, and yet people have been debating whether it's appropriate to have Mardi Gras in New Orleans. It's because the national news media don't live here, ladies and gentlemen. And they will never get it. They get the Macy's Parade because, you know, it's commercial. But news, ladies and gentlemen, now about a few more bad apples. Good apple crop. Military interrogators posing as FBI agents at Guantanamo Bay wrapped terrorism suspects in an Israeli flag and forced them to watch homosexual pornography under strobe lights during interrogation sessions that lasted as long as 18 hours. This is from a batch of FBI memos released Thursday. FBI agents working at the prison complained about the military interrogators' techniques in emails to their superiors from 2002 through 2004. That's 2 years plus. Doesn't sound like a few guys on the night shift, as Don Rumsfeld described. Don, I'm calling him Don now, ladies and gentlemen, because we are so close. He described it as just a few people on the night shift. FBI agents working at Guantanamo were complaining to their superiors about these techniques from 2002 through 2004, this according to Knight Ridder newspapers. 54 emails from FBI agents to their superiors. The agents tried to get the military interrogators to follow a less coercive approach and warned that the harsh methods could hinder future criminal prosecutions because the information gained that way is inadmissible in court. Major General Jeffrey Miller, who was in charge of the prison at the time and later went to, yes, Iraq and Abu Ghraib, I believe, he overrode the FBI agents' protests. The memos offer some of the clearest proof yet that the abuses and torture of prisoners in U.S. military custody weren't the isolated actions of low-ranking soldiers, according to the ACLU. Well, okay, but what are you going to do? Miller later left Guantanamo and was sent to Iraq, yes, under orders to find better ways of extracting intelligence from prisoners at Abu Ghraib. Good work, babe. Rhymes with Abu Ghraib. The FBI memos originally were released in 2004 under the Freedom of Information Act as part of an ACLU lawsuit, but were largely censored. The latest batch contains extensive information that had been blocked out originally. The FBI favored a law enforcement approach. Oh, how pre-9/11 of them. Geared toward collecting evidence that could be used later in prosecutions, while military officials preferred a more psychologically and physically aggressive approach, derived from the Army's survival school. In one email, an FBI agent, whose name was blocked out, described observing interrogations that used pornography and strobe lights. And that's torture? That's the club on Bourbon Street. You pay money for that, babe. He describes interrogators routinely identifying themselves as FBI agents, then interrogating a detainee for 60 to 18 hours using those tactics and rapping in the Israeli flag, constant loud music, cranking the AC down. Quote, the next time a real agent tries to talk to that guy, you can imagine the result, unquote. Yeah. Give me more of the porn and the strobe. Forget the flag. Military interrogators, quote, were being encouraged at times to use aggressive interrogation techniques in Gitmo, which are of questionable effectiveness and subject to uncertain interpretation based on law and regulation, said a separate email from an FBI agent. You know, since Hoover went, the FBI has lost all its spine, ladies and gentlemen. J. Edgar's FBI wouldn't have done that, would they? I don't know. But what I do know is, here's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, News from Outside the Bubble. From the Scotsman newspaper, neoconservatism has failed the United States and needs to be replaced by a more realistic foreign policy agenda, according to one of its prime architects. Oh, the rats, babe. Forget the apples. These are the rats. Francis Fukuyama, who wrote the best-selling book, The End of History, good prediction, and was a member of the neoconservative project, now says that both as a political symbol and a body of thought, it is, quote, evolved into something I can no longer support, unquote. He says it should be discarded onto history's pile of discredited ideologies. In an excerpt from his new book, Fukuyama declares the doctrine is, quote, now in shambles, unquote, and that its failure has demonstrated, quote, the danger of good intentions carried to extremes, unquote. Fukuyama once supported regime change in Iraq and was a signatory to a 1998 letter sent by the Project for a New American Century to Bill Clinton, urging the U.S. to step up efforts to remove Saddam Hussein from power. It was also signed by neoconservative intellectuals such as Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perl, and Donald Rumsfeld. Paul Wolfowitz. It is worth remembering on this weekend when Iraq threatens to topple over into civil war. Paul Wolfowitz testified to the Congress before the war began. Iraq has no history of ethnic strife. And in a report to be published this week, the International Crisis Group, a Brussels-based security think tank, warns that nations should begin planning for the next Iraq war, the one after the country falls apart. Failure to anticipate such a possibility could lead to further disasters, it says. Larry Wilkinson, formerly Colin Powell's chief of staff, says a new Saddam could emerge. Quote, if a civil war were to break out, we would be faced with a difficult choice. Do we enclave ourselves and hope and pray the violence is short-lived? Or do we throw our weight on one side, he asks. In his scenario, emergency powers would be granted to a political leader. The Americans would make sure there were checks and balances, but they might not last. If you put in someone who's extremely powerful at the top, after a year you might see the political apparatus around him disappearing and he's there for life, says Wilkerson. So we did all this to get a new Saddam, ladies and gentlemen, because the old one was so ugly. The alternative, he points out, could be a war that engulfs the region and leaves Iraq as a haven for terrorism. Oh, that's the is that the B or the A? According to former Prime Minister Alawi, if Iraqi politicians fail to agree on a secular government with the power to dismantle the sectarian militias, the situation will be catastrophic and civil war will break out. And it will not be limited, he says, to the borders of Iraq, but will most certainly spill over and affect a lot of neighboring countries. These are doomsayers, ladies and gentlemen. They're saying doom. I can hear them. Hear them? Listen. Doom. The Saudi foreign minister has argued that a civil war would, quote, finish Iraq forever. This is from the Times of London. The Iranians would enter the conflict, like they haven't already, because of the Shiites out, the Turks because of the Kurds, and the Arabs will definitely be dragged into the conflict. Their prime motivation would be to prevent an Iranian-backed Shiite crescent forming across Lebanon through Syria to Iran, Iraq, and the Gulf. The International Crisis Group, in its report, cautions that Sunni Arab nations, like Saudi Arabia, would be alarmed by the emergence of an Iranian-influenced entity in southern Iraq sitting on more than 80% of the country's oil. But we know that the Sunni Arab nations handle alarm with great restraint. The number of Iraqi army... That's news from outside the bubble. The rest of this you may have heard about. The number of Iraqi army battalions judged by the American trainers to be capable of fighting insurgents alone has fallen from one to none since last September. The number of Iraqi battalions capable of leading the battle with U.S. troops in a support role has grown by nearly 50%. So, a mixed report. But that same Pentagon report says insurgent attacks in Iraq, this is the insurgency that Dick Cheney told us was in its death throes last year, the insurgent attacks reached a post-war high. In the 4 months preceding January 20th, more than 550 attacks took place in Iraq from August 29th to this past January 20th. Hey, they stopped counting on Inauguration Day. Isn't that wild? It's not Inauguration Day in 2006, of course, but it would be. According to this latest security and stability report, the Defense Department is required to send to Congress. Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Affairs said the survey's conclusions, quote, were not good, but that, quote, and here, ladies and gentlemen, may be the quote you want to remember from this year about this little escapade from the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Affairs, commenting on this mixed report of the Iraqi military situation. Quote, loving us is not what it's about. Sherlock. there's more of that, but Sherlock is the only part I can say on the air. Awareness of the a relative unpopularity of U.S. troops is, quote, one of the reasons why we want to turn over the battle space to the Iraqi security forces, according to Assistant Secretary of Defense Rodman. That's not Dennis, is it? Has Dennis surfaced at the Pentagon like Jeff Skunk Baxter? That would be too wild. Only one period approaches the recent numbers from June 29th to November 26, 2004, which was the battle for Fallujah. Almost 80% of all attacks in Iraq target coalition forces. When asked to describe the individuals attacking coalition forces, 88% of Iraqis in the Sunni areas call them either freedom fighters or patriots. As has been true since the beginning of the insurgency, the vast majority of attacks take place in four of Iraq's 12 provinces. You know that they always say, well, most of the provinces are safe. That's right. Most of them are. Nobody lives there. And on a related story, this is outside the bubble because we don't care about Australia, but that story that I shared with you a couple of weeks ago from Australia about the wheat board, the monopoly wheat exporting agency from Australia, being caught in a kickback scheme to Saddam Hussein during Oil for Food. Prime Minister's office knew about it. Oh, what a surprise then. Prime Minister John Howard's office was told in 2001 that Iraq had asked the Australian Wheat Board to pay illegal kickbacks, says. This came out at the inquiry that they're holding. They actually hold inquiries on these things in Australia. They're so quaint. The inquiry heard the Prime Minister's office was cabled a briefing from New York-based Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade official stating that the Wheat Board had asked to buy Iraq to pay port fees and that such fees would breach UN sanctions. Fortunately, the Dubai port world wasn't running the port in Iraq in those days. Or we would have... Oh, I'm over here now. I don't know how I got there. I'm here. I'm just playing with buttons. Don't worry about me. And, ladies and gentlemen, just because we don't have anything else to worry about, Michael Chertoff is warning that the Gulf states are not ready for another hurricane. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff says Friday he's worried that the Gulf Coast may not be ready to withstand another major storm. He's worried. He's head of Homeland Security. He said his department is working now with state and local officials to develop plans for evacuations and other emergency response priorities. But with so much of Louisiana and Mississippi still under reconstruction, with partly rebuilt homes and numerous house trailers, quote, I personally am very concerned, he says. Homeland Security chief is very concerned, ladies and gentlemen. That's very reassuring. He's not in the reassuring business. And, in case you thought he was, from the Washington Times, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff was not aware that a Dubai-owned company was seeking to operate those port terminals and that his agency was leading the review until after the deal was approved. That's a heck of a job. Why do we have... Chertoff spokesman Russ Kanaki told the Washington Times, not a liberal newspaper, the issue rose no higher than the department's assistant secretary for policy, Stuart Baker. Chertoff was not briefed up to this until this story started appearing in the newspapers. Chertoff is the third cabinet official to acknowledge he did not know his agency had approved the plan. Secretary Rumsfeld and Treasury Secretary John Snow have publicly said they were unaware of the deal. But Chertoff's exclusion is more noteworthy because his department headed the review and is in charge of security at all the ports. Heck of a job, department, ladies and gentlemen. The Homeland Security Department, however, we are told in another story by the Associated Press, did object at first to that plan. It was the lone protest among members of the government committee that eventually approved the deal without dissent. The department's early objections were settled later in the department's in the government's review of the port deal. So down there in the bowels of Homeland Security, somebody said, hey, wait. That was settled. It doesn't say in the story how it was settled. And Secretary Chertoff was not informed. Bush administration did secretly require a company in the UAE to cooperate with future U.S. investigations before approving the takeover, even though the administration says it's not fair to set different conditions for a company in the Middle East than for one in Great Britain. But they did, secretly, according to the Associated Press. As part of that port deal, Dubai Ports World agreed to reveal records on demand about foreign operational direction of its business, including details about the design, maintenance, or operation of ports and equipment. Administration, interestingly, did not require Dubai Ports to keep copies of business records on U.S. soil where they would be subject to court orders. And, of course, Wall Street Journal, one of the many newspapers weighing in, saying U.S. ports have long been ill-prepared for a terrorist attack, regardless of the nationality of the owner. Pretty soon, Michael Chertoff will announce that he's concerned about that.
Friends are calling 'cause they're falling down. I've joined the circus, but I ain't no clown. There's fire eaters and some midgets too. Around the corner, right next to the zoo. Call me crazy, and it's probably true. At least you call me now, here's a clue. What's black and white and red all over? A newspaper story about a murder lover. I feel half crazy and I feel half-hearted. Down the well of wishes of the dearly departed. Come to find out we are all connected. Mosquitoes bit me and they got infected. Mardi Gras has come to town. Time to lay your burden down. I'm back in a Tuesday again. Get 'em in that call, but to no avail.
I got the boat, but I forgot the sail. I'll soon be rowing gently down the stream. Upon the sheets I will lie and dream. When I wake, the sun will shine like madness down on the heads of the drunken masses, out on the streets with their glasses full, riding in a buggy while the mule pulls. Drivers rewrite the course of history while the local past remains in mystery. Europeans and people of color joining the party that is seeing double. Mardi Gras has come to town. Time to lay your burden down. How fast can a Tuesday get? Tell me how fat can it Tuesday get? You're on the water with a fishing net. Boil it down and sit at the table. Peel and eat till you're not able. The autopsy showed you were full of fish. Broken heart and a come true wish. Now if fire burns out on the levee and the weight of the world is not that heavy, as when you were a little kid, now don't forget to pick up the lid. If you went on back, would you change a thing? Wait and see what tomorrow will bring. Mardi Gras has come to town. Time to lay your burden down. Hot back in a Tuesday get.
This is Le Show coming to you from New Orleans. Ladies and gentlemen, the Dubai port deal talked about earlier in this broadcast continues to reverberate. And although there are attempts to depict it as a partisan affair, it's Republicans and Democrats alike in Congress and in the gubernatorial suites of the country are realizing, if nothing else, hey, I got to get reelected. I'm going to be for this. Meanwhile, Bob Dole has been hired by Dubai Ports World to help shepherd that deal through. Even though he's working for Dubai, Elizabeth Dole, she may have to run for reelection soon. wrote in a letter Wednesday she is concerned about turning port operations over to a Middle Eastern company. The chairman of the North Carolina Democratic Party called on Senator Dole to remove herself from oversight of the Dubai port deal, since her husband is being paid by Dubai to support the deal. A spokeswoman for Senator Dole rejected the criticism as a partisan attack. Oh, boy, they spot those from a mile away, don't they? Since it comes from the spokesman for the Democratic Party. Yeah, that's a good call, Liddy. Elizabeth Dole knows that her work is separate from Bob Dole, said her spokeswoman, Lindsay Taylor Mabry. That's a former Miss America if I've ever heard one. Bob Dole works for a law firm. Elizabeth Dole works for the people of North Carolina. Dole, the former senator, not the current senator, said in a written statement he's not going to lobby his wife or any members of Congress. His spokesman would not say what if any lobbying the firm is done. Dubai Ports World beefed up its lobbying efforts after lawmakers threatened this week to scuttle a transaction. Dole's statement said he will confine his lobbying to the Bush administration. I have not, nor will I, quote, lobby, unquote. Like it's a bad thing, he puts it in quotes. Members of Congress on this issue, not even at home, he wrote. It's increasingly common, according to the Washington Post, for lobbyists and legislators or executives, branch managers, to be in the same family. But it's Washington. What do you expect? And the Dubai company, a senior executive of which has just joined the Bush administration, coincidentally. This is a nutty world. The Dubai company has said it'll ask for a little delay, you know, so we can step back, take a deep breath, cool our heads. Maybe take a phone call or two.
Optimistic Eagle.
Hey, 43. Secret Service must be listening to your Iraq speeches.
Hey, 41. We don't leave it to the Secret Service to pick out the code names anymore. That's pre-9/11 code naming. The whole deal's handled out of Carl's office now.
Uh-huh. Everybody stay on message.
Yes, sir.
Even down to the code names.
See, it's all about execution. Yeah, I mean, that's why they call this the execution branch.
They don't really call it that, but well, get your point. So, Sprout, hate to say it. Hate like the dickens to say it, but not the smoothest job handling the Dubai ports deal, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
What's that?
How people out there could allow themselves to be so misled. I mean, you know the Dubai folks. I know them. They're not about terrorism. They're about corporate synergisticalism.
Yeah, the prince is a prince of a fella, no doubt about it. But gotta be feeling a little bit ticked off at us just about now. Gotta be wondering about his American friends.
Listen, I said in public, anybody who opposed this deal was engaging in the hard bigotry of bigotry.
And a lot of folks who aren't up for election might be convinced by that.
Well,
there's just this little problem of the folks who are up for election.
Well, see, this wasn't supposed to happen. The Chainster,
Dick Cheney,
yeah, he's been saying we got a Unitarian executive. We don't have to worry about Congress anymore. They're a pre-9/11 type institution.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks to me like they're taking a pretty big bite out of the presidential hiney right about now. And it's not just the Dems. I got Bill Frist's teeth marks on my butt cheek, so
don't need to hear about your butt-ever whatever. So, where's Mr. Cheney during this little crisis-type deal?
Well, exactly. I guess he figures he'd rather shoot faces than twist arms. I mean, you know, it's not like I was following this deal every step of the way. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. It's a major step forward on our trade policy. If we're ever going to succeed with Grover Norquist's long-range plan to allow foreign government-owned companies to take operational control of some of the less essential cabinet departments, this thing's got to fly. I know that, but look here, sir. I am a wartime president. I mean, I can't be on top of everything all the time and still keep in great physical shape. No two ways can do, Jose.
Been a while since I brought this up, but Maybe get a better hearing this time around. Wouldn't be a totally wrong-headed notion to bring some wise men onto your team now. People who can bring a fresh but experienced approach, who don't have to spend half their time defending a war they thought up. 41, gotta talk a little iPod talk here, but I just gotta figure out how to put you on shuffle, because I keep hearing the same song. Maybe one of these days you'll hear me when I say Jim Baker's not coming in to shake things up. Doesn't have to be Baker.
Or Scowcroft.
Well, don't throw out the whole bathtub with the baby, even if you just brought in some congressional relations people. Because here's the deal. That screw Congress approach works fine when you've got big poll numbers in the first term.
I don't govern by polls, as you well know.
Duly noted. But second term, Congress is a more agile kind of duck than you are. Maybe some more experienced duck wranglers could...
Let me take this. Be right back to you.
Fine, but...
Optimistic Eagle.
Mr. President, Bob Dole, sir. Bob Dole, sorry to get through like this on a secure line, but...
Hey, no problemo. Just talking to my dad.
Good man, your dad. Yeah. Bob Dole always liked him.
Yeah.
But he's yesterday's news. Fact is, he's day before yesterday's news. For that matter, so's Bob Dole. But we got some facts on the Dubai ports operation, sir. Bob Dole's not going to lobby Congress, yeah. So Bob Dole thought to himself, who better to lobby if it's not Congress than numero uno in the executive branch? And even though Bob Dole knows you're up to speed on this little matter, he can always get a little bit more up to speed, which would be where Bob Dole would kind of come in on the deal.
Bob, can I have Karl Rove get back to you? This is sort of his account. I don't want to expunge on his jurisdiction.
Uh-huh. Well, Bob Dole's been shunted beside before. No big deal.
Well...
Liddy's right. Probably shouldn't have done the limp dick commercials. All right, sir. Thank you for your time. Don't want to take any more...
Hey, 41, there's one of your experienced people right there on the other line.
Baker?
Bob Dole, lobbying for the Dubai port deal.
Yeah, I heard about that. Well, where do you go after you've been selling get-it-up pills? Look, 43, this is not gonna get better by itself.
See, that's the kind of talk I really get tired of. If I wanted to hear that kind of nonsense, I could just, you know, go have a briefing on Iraq.
First, you go take on the company, make them the scapegoat for Iraq intel. Didn't say a word.
Wait.
Now your folks are burning some very valuable bridges in the Emirates. It's a little late for the kids to be staying up having a big party and messing up Dad's living room, isn't it? Look, helpful suggestion. Fella who could come in, hit the ground running, put things back together. Colon.
41. We've been there. We've done that there.
People in Congress still respect him. Probably feel a little sorry for him. That's a powerful combination.
Sir, Colin's a good man. He's played his part. He's performed his service. We drilled that hole dry. But look, always appreciate being reminded of your particular concerns. Appreciate a father's anxiety for his son. Mm. Tell you something, 41. I really don't think the good Lord chose me to lead the country at this hour just to see me fail. Do you?
Well, when you put it that way.
Of course. Thought so. Okay, sir, give my love to Mom.
Barr sends it right back.
No kidding. You take care.
You too. They could help take care for you, but...
Hello? Bob Dole's still in the...
Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for, yes, it's copyrighted, feature of this broadcast. I'm going to read the trades for you. Don't get too excited. It's not that copyrighted. From Chemical and Engineering News, serving the chemical, life sciences, and laboratory worlds. I will read, Yucca science data are deemed valid. Stand by. The basic science behind the proposed Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Repository in Nevada remains sound, despite disclosures that government scientists working on the project failed to comply with quality assurance rules. Letting that sink in. This is according to the Energy Department in a report issued this month. Department of Energy officials say infiltration modeling work, not done by Heidi Klum, performed by U.S. Geological Survey hydrologists, failed to meet department standards and is being redone somewhere else. Says Paul Golan, acting director of the Office of Civilian Radioactive Waste Management. Quote, despite the fact that the science is consistent, our quality assurance requirements were not met. Unquote. Meeting this obligation is necessary for submitting a license application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, he added. We find it best just to replace this work. Unquote. Nearly a year ago, the Department of Energy revealed that several U.S. Geological Survey scientists had exchanged emails discussing possible falsification of quality assurance documents on the water infiltration research. Several investigations were launched, including one by DOE, to determine whether the studies themselves had been compromised. This is just for storing nuclear waste, no biggie. Paul Golan says the report makes clear that the technical basis developed by the U.S. Geological Survey has a strong conceptual foundation and is corroborated by independently derived scientific conclusions. The U.S. Geological Survey concluded the rate of water seepage into Yucca Mountain from rainfall was relatively slow and unlikely. Underline this word, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure. Unlikely to corrode waste canisters and potentially spread radiation to sources of drinking water. Well, unlikely is good enough for me. What about you? That's good science. The kind we like when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Here it is. the next Winter Olympics. You be the judge.
And Plesetskaya ends with the triple axel. If you want her butter off the ice, here's the number to call.
A row of judges deciding who gets the gold. That's your father's Olympics. Next time, NBC says to the Winter Games, get real.
Shannon, the audience has voted you off the ice before the freestyle. There's no endorsement contract. You have to go.
I just want to say, Plesetskaya's on drugs.
Just like everything else, only different. The Winter Olympics Reality Edition. Because you're too busy for anything else. And we've got a deal to save. Next Winter Olympics on the networks of NBC. And anything else we buy in the meantime.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week. Got him right here. A media watchdog in Britain has criticized a revered broadcaster, the BBC, for airing foul language used by various performers during last summer's Live 8 benefit. Remember that? How much that helped? Ofcom, an independent communications regulator, said it received complaints from viewers about the salty talk employed by artists such as Madonna, Green Day, and Snoop Dogg. The show was broadcast without time delay. The BBC has apologized, saying it regretted the offense to its viewers. Some performers were approached about language concerns before the concert, but the BBC said it was not given access to all the stars. Dateline Boston, Building 19, a discount store known for its quirky sales circulars, described a package of sleeveless T-shirts as wife beaters in a recent sales flyers. Store officials admitted the flyer went too far. It upset advocates for domestic violence victims. I can't say what I thought. I know what I thought, but I can't say out loud what I thought, said a spokeswoman for such an organization. The flyer advertised a three-pack of men's undershirts as wife beaters, said the activist. That goes, you know, down to that does go to numbing and dumbing down and normalizing and suggesting that battering is a normal behavior. Building 19 spokesman Jerry Ellis took the criticism seriously. Quote, they were right. It was awful. And I'm sorry they happened. I'm sorry it happened. Everyone was apologetic at the discount store's headquarters. It's a slang expression, a street expression, but we should have known better not to use it. I'm supposed to read every word. Sometimes it's busy or I'm lazy. We are working on a retraction, Ellis said. And two former aides of Governor Bob Taft in Ohio and then Governor George Voinovich were convicted this week on misdemeanor ethics violations for accepting loans from a Republican fundraiser and coin dealer. They're the fourth and fifth current or former state officials convicted as part of the ongoing investment scandals. Douglas Talbot, former aide, visibly shaken during the proceedings, addressed the court. Quote, I apologize for any harm that this may have caused, and I can assure you I won't be in this courtroom or any other courtroom. Yeah, that's a suspicious assurance, if you ask me. But you didn't ask me. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Some Los Angeles dog trainer corrections this week, because they're good. An article about veteran doctors helping to reduce military fatalities in Iraq said Walter Reed Army Medical Center is in Bethesda, Maryland. It's in Washington. An item about Merle Haggard said the singer was approaching his 60th birthday in April. Haggard will turn 70 in April. A review of a new translation of the Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, said Padmasambhava was credited with introducing to Buddhism in Tibet in the 8th century B.C. In fact, it was the 8th century. An article about Puerto Rico's relationship with the United States said 50 Puerto Ricans had died in U.S. military service. In fact, more than 1,000 have died. Well, it's just some zeros in a thing. Also, Bernice Acevedo, a medical student in Puerto Rico, was quoted as saying nurses on the island were paid less than $6 an hour. Puerto Rican registered nurses have a median average salary of $10.59 an hour. In addition, Kenneth McClintock, president of the Puerto Rican Senate, was identified as a former governor of the island. He has never held that position. An article about a British man charged with killing his wife and baby said a Framingham district court was about 22 miles east of Boston. Framingham is west of Boston. An article about President Bush's State of the Union address and his justification for conducting a domestic surveillance program said experts point out the U.S. gets only a fraction, about 10%, of its oil imports from the Middle East. In fact, nearly 20% of U.S. oil imports come from the Middle East. A story in the California section said that monthly ridership for the Red Line subway has been flat. In fact, monthly ridership has grown by 22%. And finally, a week ahead item about Merle Haggard said the singer would turn 60 in April. A correction Wednesday said he would actually turn 70. In fact, he will be 69. Los Angeles Dog Trainer corrections for you. In case you're not feeling safe enough yet, the actors who star in the movie The Road to Guantanamo were questioned by police at a British airport under anti-terrorism legislation. The men who play British inmates were returning from the Berlin Film Festival, where the movie won a Silver Bear Award. One of the actors said a police officer asked him if he intended to make any more political films. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns to you next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the East Coast via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Shortwave around the world through the facilities. I did that. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Channel 136 on Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast. It is so hip. You got to sign up for that at kcrw.com. And it'll be just like having a happy Mardi Gras, even with everything. If you would agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Sorry, I thought I made it clear. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at innerworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh guests. Le Show playlists at harryshearer.com. And my thanks to David Friedman here at WWOZ-FM, New Orleans, for once again playing the perfect host. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.
Hey, isn't that Anderson Cooper? Andy! Andy, I wear your mom's jeans.